Chapter 24. Lord of the Red Sands. Angron. He hunts. He hunts. He hunts. The end is coming. This is a thing he knows, something real inside a mind sotaed in unreality. The end is coming. It is hours away. Mere hours, though the concept of time in those terms is not something he understands as he once did. The end is coming soon, though. He knows that. And so he hunts and hunts, not just to sustain his strength, but to stave off dissolution. His flesh is no longer meat, and the metaphysical corpus that makes up his muscles no longer tires. His breath is no longer air, no longer a thing he draws in to speak and suspire. It's a sucking gust of blood-scent and ash-stink, and a heaving exhalation of the heat mirage that dances above an open furnace. Weariness is a memory, dimmed as if a century has passed, something he can no longer conceive of, let alone feel. And yet, dissolution pulls at him. In the moments he doesn't fight, in the heartbeat seconds he isn't hunting, he feels the atoms of his essence loosening. They threaten to fly apart, drifting away on the wind. He accepts this. He doesn't know how this can be, but he accepts it, the way a child accepts their parents know best, the way a man or a woman accepts that they need to eat and breathe and sleep. It is the way of things. There are quiet moments, though, more of them lately. They strike him when he turns the bleeding spheres he has for eyes towards the walls of the final fortress. They come when he sees the angelic bodies in red ceramite scattered across the dead earth. In these moments, rare but not as rare as they once were, he knows that he wasn't always this way. Before he was this being, he was another. A weaker one, a creature limited by sinew and bone, a creature... No. A man. I was a man, wasn't I? Enslaved to a cycle of cranial pain. But that was then, and this is now. He is no longer that being. He is no longer allowed to be that being. Something else, something as immense as a storm eating the entire sky, and still bigger, still more, won't let him be what he once was. Insofar as he is capable of identity, he is the Lord of the Red Sands, an it as much as a he in what remains of his mind. These flashes of awareness linger long enough to tease an awakening, only to submerge into the boiling soup of his forethoughts. Back to the rage, back to the hunt, back to slaughtering to ward off dissolution. He hunts, he hunts, he hunts! He falls from the sky upon convoys of refugees and reinforcements, cratering the ground in their midst and reaving through flesh and bone and iron and rock, flavoring the air with sprays of blood, darkening the ground with running life. Somehow this is holy. He knows not how or why, only that it is. It's a prayer to a god he doesn't know, at the heart of a faith he doesn't feel. And his massacres are prayers that rise to the highest heavens. He knows the others, the weaker ones, need him for the last assault. Even this shredded realization is more focused than he has possessed in an incalculable span. It is another change, another breath of difference as the end draws near. The weaker ones need him. Yes, their voices rise in his honor, akin to prayers themselves. And how strange that is. Even through the anger that comprises almost all he's allowed to feel, there's a strangeness in the way they exalt him, these mortal berserkers, the ones that call themselves his sons, the ones that seek the same peak he has reached. He cannot stay with them for long, though. He has to hunt. He has to rend and break and carve and kill. Each time he tries to remain in their mustering horde, the pain of dissolution begins to draw his form apart. Each time he has advanced on the final wall, the Delphic battlement. It is the Delphic battlement. He has slowed, weakened, and staggered. The threat of dissolution becomes imminent, and some invisible repulsion keeps him back. It rakes the unflesh away from whatever transmuted matter his bones have become. Screaming, he flees back to the hunt. He cannot attack the final fortress. Not yet. His sons, in all their weakling corporeality, will have to take the wall. And then... Wings. White wings. An angel of gold. Yes. Yes, what a death it will be. The shedding of such blood, the taste of it burning upon the tongue, the strength of it flowing through him. Stinking acid runs in stalactites of drool from his uneven maw at the promise of the angel's coming death. Kill him. Yes, he will. But he can't. Not yet. Not now. Kill him for me. The creature that was once Angron shakes its monstrous head, dreadlocks of poisonous technology rattling with the motion. Kill him for me, Angron. Who speaks? Who says these things, conjuring meaning inside the boiling stew of his thoughts? The demon, the lord of the Red Sands, always hears the melded and meaningless voices of its sons in its broken mind, but this is no child at the feet of its father. This is a command, a long-felt urge at last given voice. The ground shakes as the demon launches skyward. The air cracks with the rupture of the sound barrier. Who speaks? He sees no likely soul in the sky. He sees no speaker on the teeming ground. Kill him for me, Angron. Break him on the steps of the final fortress and throw open the Eternity Gate. I will deal with our father. All you must do is kill our brother. These words feel familiar. He has sensed them 1,000 times, perhaps 10,000, but only as part of the primal urge running through his bloodstream. Nevertheless, he knew them. He felt them. Now he hears them. And in that moment of connection, as the speaker reaches out, Angron reaches back. It is not a gesture of love on the demon's part, nor one of trust, but one of clawed caution. The Lord of the Red Sands reaches back, and it sees and it knows the truth of the speaker's soul. The speaker believes he is a man. He believes he is Angron's brother Horus. These things are not so. The speaker believes he is destined for a throne, and while the claim of a fated throne may be true, he is not a man, not any more, and he is hardly even Horus. Angron was remade, the stuff of that Primarch's molecules converted through transmutational metaphysical fusion. But this man, this speaker, has undergone no such change. He has been hollowed out. He is a shell holding 4 essences, a puppet capering at the behest of 4 cosmic puppeteers. He is a lingering delusion of identity over a hole in reality.
Horus,
thinks the Lord of the Red Sands. It is the demon's first, purest thought in so very, very long.
Yes, brother. The Emperor is weakening. Magnus wears away at the invisible shield. I make ready for my landing. It will not be long now. You are my herald, Angron. Lay waste to the Delphic Wall, rip the white wings from Sanguinius's back, and tear open the Eternity Gate. Kill the angel, and you will be sated. I promise you this.
There is more, the voice says more, but the meaning fades away. It's lost again in the churning thresh that passes for Angron's cognition. The Lord of the Red Sands follows the currents of life that he can sense but not see, and dives groundward. He hunts to feed, both himself and the god of blood and war that he worships without realizing. It is another convoy, though he understands this only in the most basic sense that here is prey, and prey is to be hunted. The defenders fight him, seeking to drive him back with a storm of las cannon fire, volkite beams, and a hail of bolts.
This achieves nothing. But it hurts, and pain is a curious thing to an immortal. The Lord of the Red Sands feels pain just as a mortal does. No blade driving into his mutagenic flesh hurts any less than it would were he still a man, but he has an infinitely deeper well of endurance. His nerves fire, and the pain engine in his brain is kindled to shrieking life by such stimuli. But the pain never stops him the way it would overwhelm a living, reasoning being, aware of the potential of its own destruction. He sweeps left and right with his black blade, all previous mastery of weapons denied to him by his cognitive alterations, and wholly irrelevant now anyway. His size and strength banish all need for dueling. Swordplay is a concern beneath his berserk mind. He hunts. He hunts. He hunts. To flee from him is to be cut down by the horde that surges in his shadow. To face him is to die. Corporal Marlus Zanir is thrown into the air, his las rifle slipping from his grip. He sees his fate several seconds before plunging into it, and his body locks in screamless horror at the open jaws beneath him. Then everything is wet, red, and searingly hot. Pliant walls clamp against him, crushing the breath from his body, snapping the bones of his shoulders. His arms outstretched ahead of him and further down into the lightless black of Angron's throat begin to dissolve in the corrosive slime coating the monster's gullet. And Zanir is still alive. He isn't dead. The flesh of his arms is darkening and bubbling and popping, and the pain is enough that his scream hits such a pitch it becomes silent. All the while he's sliding down into the blacker confines below, squeezed by the walls of the creature's body. Down he goes into a mad god's reconstruction of a digestive tract, where the bones of men and women he knew well are waiting for him. Corporal Marlus Zanir has 7 more seconds of unwanted life, finding himself in a cauldron of protoplasmic digestive juices. He sinks below the surface, comes up once as a shrieking red skull with the flesh sloughing from his bones, and then sinks a second time. This time, for good. The Lord of the Red Sands is aware of this vile drama only in the sense of its own distracted satisfaction. Angron keeps hunting. Soon the silent and unseen shield will come down. Soon he will advance upon the Delphic battlement. Until then, he hunts. He hunts. He hunts. He hunts.